So the sheet which is with you, so there is a selection of verses which we will discuss today. So I'll chant, you can repeat. So the verses, the Devanagari is given, then the Roman IAC is given, then after that the Anvaya is there, just for easy to pronounce and understand. So the Devanagari, the full version is what we will chant. I'll chant, you can repeat. First we will chant Sri Guru Bhyo Namaha, then these verses. Om Sri Guru Bhyo Namaha Hari Om. Indriyani Paranyahu. Indriyebhyah Param Manah. Manasastu Parabuddhihi. Yo Buddhehe Paratastu Saha. Yuktahara Viharasya. Yukta Cheshtasya Karmasu. Yukta Swapna Abhobodasya. Yoga Bhavati Dukkaha. Yogi Yunjita Satatam. Atmanam Rahasi Stitah. Ekaki Yata Chittatma. Nirashira Parigraha. Suchaudeshe Pratishthapya. Siramasana Matmanah. Natyutritam Nati Nicham. Saila Dinakushotaram. Tatraika Brahmanah Kritva. Yata Chittendriyah Kriyah. Upavishyasane Yunjyat. Yogam Atma Vishuddhaye. Samam Kaya Shiro Grivam. Dharayan Achalam Stirah. Samprekshya Nasika Gramswam. Dishaschanavalokayan. Prashantatma Vigatabhihi. Brahmachari Vrate Stitah. Manasamyamya Machitto. Yukta Asita Matparah. Shanai Shanai Ruparamed. Buddhya Dhriti Grihitaya. Atma Samstam Manakritva. Na Kinchidapi Chintayet. Yato Yato Nischarati. Manas Chanchalam Astiram. Tatat Tato Niyam Yaitad. Atman Yeva Vasham Nayet. Prashanta Manasam Kenam. Yoginam Sukham Uttamam. Upaiti Shantarajasam. Brahma Bhutamakalmasham. Hari Om Tat Sat. So today we will see some ideas about dhyana yoga meditation from the Bhagavad Gita. So normally Bhagavad Gita, the karma yoga part is very famous, very popular. Like if you ask anyone what does Gita say, people will just roll out, do your duties, don't look for results. So that is, that aspect of the teaching is very popular, and Bhagavad Gita also gives equal emphasis on dhyana yoga. So karma yoga and dhyana yoga are like two wings, and both are needed to reach the goal, and both actually prepare the person for dhyana. Because ultimately the freedom is going to come from me knowing who am I, what is the purpose of life. So only two things we need to know, okay, who am I and what is the purpose of life. These two, if we know, understand correctly, then we will have absolutely no scope for any sorrow in our life. The goal of Gita is to free us from all sorrow. Okay? So, na anushochanti panditaha. The Gita teaching starts the second chapter, 11th sloka, with that statement. The goal is complete freedom from all sorrow, and the way is knowledge. Right? And the knowledge of who am I and what is the purpose of life. These two questions, if we know the correct answer, then absolutely there is no scope for any sorrow in our life. Ups and downs will be there in life. Life will have ups and downs. Life will have success, failure. Everything will be there. But sorrow need not be there. Right? So that is the idea. Now how to get to that state is the goal of Gita. How to get to that state of knowledge, right, where we have a clear understanding of who am I and what is the purpose of life, so that we can go about living life, doing our duties, and with all the ups and downs of life, in spite of all of that, we will have complete resilience, full of cheerfulness, and we can do our duty without any sorrow. So that is the goal. Okay. So that is called Jivan Mukti. The goal of life is Jivan Mukti. Not somewhere after death, nothing. No. Mukti is here and now. Right? Don't worry about, okay, punarabhijananapuranikmanam. That is another concept. We don't need to worry about that. We don't need to even think about that. Okay. Jivan Mukti is the goal. Okay. What is Jivan Mukti? Freedom from Shatripu. Shatripu is Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madha, Matsarya. Okay. Kama is desire, or you can say greed. Right? Kama. Then Kama Krodha, anger. Then Lobha is greed. Then Moha. Moha is delusion. Delusion between what is permanent, what is transitory. Right? That is called Nitya, Anitya. Confusion is called the Moha. Then Matha. Matha is arrogance. And Matsarya is jealousy. Okay. This is the Shat Ripu Devas, six enemies, or actually these are nothing but six defects of the mind. The six are nothing but six defects of the mind. Okay. We have to fix these six defects. Freedom from these six is called moksha. Moksha is freedom from these six. Now these six are nothing but various manifestations of sorrow only. Okay. No one says, I am very angry and very happy. No. No one says, I am very full of jealous but I am happy. No. So, any of these things are actually different manifestations of one common defect, which is sorrow. Sorrow manifests in the mind as these things. Okay. So, now freedom from these things means automatically freedom from sorrow. Freedom from sorrow is the goal, and that freedom from sorrow is called moksha. Moksha means freedom. Mukti means freedom. Jivan Mukti means freedom while living. Freedom from what? Freedom from shatripu. This much you should be very clear. Don't worry about next birth, past birth, now. Okay. Freedom means freedom from Shatripu. Now, if you have freedom from Kshatriya, if you have freedom from these, then your mind will be full of jnana, bhakti, vairagya. Jnana about who am I, bhakti towards Ishvara, vairagya towards the world. Finally, we have only these three, right? Jiva, Jagat, Ishvara. So the correct attitude towards Jiva, Jagat, Ishvara is bhakti towards Ishvara, vairagya towards the world, and jnana towards the self. Okay. So this jnana, bhakti, vairagya, if you have, you will be free from all sorrow. Now, this is the goal. Okay. How to get this jnana, bhakti, vairagya? And these three are actually interconnected. Once you have one, automatically you will get the other three. So how to get this? That is all in the life. If you have this jnana, bhakti, vairagya, then doesn't matter. You can take any number of janma as a bhakta of the Lord. Where is the problem? Problem comes only when you don't have vairagya towards the world. If you don't have vairagya, then life becomes painful affair. If you have vairagya, then life is enjoyable. You can enjoy life, right? So my teacher used to say, a swimming pool, for a person who knows how to swim, it is a playground. For a person who doesn't know how to swim, it is a burial ground. The same swimming pool. If you know how to swim, it's a playground. You can enjoy it. If you don't know how to swim, then it's a place where you can die. The same thing with this world. This world is like a swimming pool. If you have vairagya, you can enjoy this world. Sri Ramakrishna puts in a very nice way. He says, like if you want to enter into the shark infested water and swim, you rub turmeric on your body and then you enter. So there is a belief, you don't need to worry about whether it is true or not, but at least the idea you need to understand. The example you need to understand. If you want to cut a jackfruit, what do? First you smear your hand with olive, then you cut the jackfruit. Then that jackfruit, the juice will not stick to your hand, then you can cut the jackfruit, you can enjoy it. That is called vairagya. So if you have vairagya, then you can enjoy this world. If you don't have vairagya, you will suffer in this world. So for a person who has got jnana, bhakti, vairagya, there is no, janma is not a problem. Understand? Janma is not a problem. That is why if you see Sri Ramakrishna and even Vivekananda, they say like, I am ready to come thousands of times. I am ready to take millions of births to help people. Actually, these people, they don't really bother about coming to this world. Sri Ramakrishna calls them as Ishvara Koti. Whenever the Lord comes, they also come along with the Lord and they serve the world, they help the Lord in His work and they don't suffer samsara. Samsara means suffering. They don't have any suffering. Why? Because they have jnana, bhakti, vairagya. So the problem is not birth. You have to be very clear. Because if the problem is birth, then the Lord coming again and again also will be a problem for him. Right? He says, no, like, Paritranaya Sadhuram Vinashaya Dushkritam, right? Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, he says, I'm going to come again and again. Then is he in samsara then? No. Does Punarupi Jananam, Punarupi Maranam problem, does it apply to the Lord? No. Why? Because he has got jnana, bhakti, vairagya. So, the goal is not to be free from life. And Paramatyanji puts in a very nice way. He says, if you define the goal as freedom from rebirth, then you will have a negative attitude towards the current birth also, which is not a right attitude. So never define moksha as freedom from rebirth. No. Moksha means freedom from kshatriya. By jnana bhakti vairagya. If you get jnana bhakti vairagya, you can take millions of births doing kaikarya for the Lord without any problem. So, jivan mukti is the goal. I want to be free here and now in this birth from the kshatriya and I don't mind coming again and again and again with jnana bhakti vairagya to this world to do the Lord's work. That's all. Now, this you can achieve here and now. You don't need to say, okay, what will happen after death? Don't worry. Vaikuntha, Kailasa, no problem, don't worry. You don't even need to bring all those things into our consideration. Here and now I want to get Jnana, Bhakti, Vairagya so that I can be free from Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Madha, Matsarya, and I want to be free. Jivan Mukti is the goal. Entire Gita is repeating this only again and again. In between, Arjuna asks the question, what happens when the person dies, this, that and all. So Krishna brings in Krama Mukti and all those ideas. But those are not the goal. And in fact, Gita condemns people aiming to go to heaven and Swarga and all those things. Gita condemns very, very heavily. So we are not worried about what happens after death. We are completely focused on becoming a Jivan Mukta here and now. That should be very clear. Okay. So, now how do we become free? What is the problem? Problem is very simple. First thing is, we have this problem of security complex. We seek security in this world. We say, oh, I need this, I need that to be able to live, I need this, I need that. We think money will give us security, we think job will give us security, we think so many things will give us security. So this security seeking is one problem. Second thing is pleasure seeking. We think we will get pleasure from various things in this world. Now these two are kind of, I would say, evolutionary remnants. In evolution, when as an animal, okay, security and pleasure was got from all this world. But as human beings, we have outgrown those. We don't depend on this world for security and pleasure. Okay? So then what do we depend upon for security? We say law of karma is there, the Lord is there, there is an order in this universe. If I do good, good will come. If I work sufficiently, this life will be taken care of. Why should I worry about it? Nothing to worry. Right? Krishna says, Ananya Sintayantoma, Yajana Paryupasate, Teshan Nityabhyasthanam, Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham. Krishna says very clearly, you work in this world for the welfare of the living beings in this world. Seeing this world as not different from me. Ananya means like Vishwarupa Ishvara. This world is not different from the Lord. It is the Lord himself who has manifested as this world. So, working in this world is service to the Lord. So serve, work in this world, serve all the living beings in this world as a Ishvara Kaitarya. That is service to the Lord. If you do that, then the Lord says, Yoga Kshema Vahamyam. I will take care of your yoga and kshema. Your security, I will take care. You don't need to worry about it. So that is the answer of Gita, of the Vedanta to the security problem. You don't worry about security. Lord will take care of your security. You ensure that you work for the Lord in this world. Do service. It might be to your family, it will be to your profession, it will be social service. There is no difference. Right? So, there is no difference between sacred work and secular work. No difference. Do everything as service to the Lord. Right? So, etu sarvani karmani mayi sanyasya matparaha ete. And Paramatthana puts it very easy. He'll say that sarv, you have to stress on sarv for at least 2-3 seconds. Etu sarvani karmani. You have to cover the entire world. Because there is no exception in this world. Every action is a contribution to the Lord. Right? He is the bhokta of everything. Right? He is the bhokta of all actions. Right? Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwari. So he is the beneficiary of all actions. What does it mean? Suppose you are walking on the road and someone stranger is there. He comes and says, are you from this campus? You say yes. He says, I am new to this place. Which is the way to go to Sarvam complex? And then you tell him, okay, you go straight and then you take right. It is there. Now, who is the beneficiary of this action? He says, the Lord says, I am the beneficiary. Understand? You are helping one stranger. But this is his world. This stranger is not different from his world. He is not outside his world. So you helping a stranger on the road, the beneficiary is the Lord. Right? So you go to house and your mother says, can you just go and buy this grocery and come? You go to the shop, you buy the grocery and come and give it to your mother. Who is the beneficiary of this work? The Lord is the beneficiary. Or you are in your office, you are working in your office, and then you are doing some work, or in your lab you are doing some research, you are trying to get some results, you are working hard, publishing a paper, everything. Who is the beneficiary of this? The Lord is the beneficiary. Understand? So there is nothing called secular work. Right? Sarvani karmani hite. So there is nothing called secular work. Why? Because this world is His only. Right? Yatas pravriti bhutani yena sarvam idam satam swakarmanatam abhyachya. Right? This entire world has come from the Lord and it is staying in the Lord. The Lord is not different from this world. So, swakarmana tam abhyachya. Doing your duty is worship of the Lord. Your duty as a student, your duty as a son, your duty as a daughter, your duty as a mother, your duty as a student, as a citizen, all duties, He is the beneficiary. Understood? This is what is Karma Yoga. So Karma Yoga is nothing but this world is not different from the Lord. This world is a manifestation of the Lord. It is Vishwarupa Ishvara. Vishwam Yasya Rupaha Saha Vishwarupaha. This Vishwam is a form of the Lord only. Right? And Swami Vivekananda goes one more step. He says, there is no God other than the sum total of all jivas, he says. Swami Vivekananda, in one of the places, he says, there is no God other than the jivas. The jivas is God. There is no God other than jivas, he says. Serving the jivas is the way to serve the Lord. Right? So, and in Bhagavatam, in Kapilopadesha, I think that day we read, right? Like Kapilopadesha, he says very clearly, he says, ignoring the jivas and if you go and worship in the temple, he says it's a waste. It's a misunderstanding. You can't ignore the jivas and go and worship in the temple. And same thing if you see Swami Vivekananda's Rameshwaram lecture, he tells Rameshwaram lecture very clearly. He says that Shiva Jnane Jiva Seva, knowing that Jiva is Shiva, you serve the Jiva. That is Karma Yoga. And that is why the Dhyana Yoga 6th chapter starts with Anashrita Karma Phalam Karyam Karma Karoti Yaha Sa Sanyasita Yogisha. Anashrita Karma Phalam, right? Without depending upon the karma phala, right? Anashrita karma phalam, karyam karma karoti yaha. He who does whatever is to be done, his duty. Sa sannyasi, sa yogi. He is a sannyasi, he is a yogi. So the Dhyana Yoga chapter in Gita starts with Karma Yoga. The first line starts with Karma Yoga only. So Karma Yoga is a prerequisite for Dhyana Yoga. So Karma Yoga, what does Karma Yoga do? It cuts your dependence upon this world for security. That is the role of Karma Yoga. It's essential, it is important, it disconnects your dependence upon this world for security. What do you say? You say, I will work, I will do my duty, the Lord will take care. I don't need to work for my security. I will work, I will do my duty as an offering to the Lord. And the Lord will take care. I am not going to sit idle. I am going to do my duty. But as offering to the Lord. Now this is Karma Yoga. So our Chinmayanandji puts it a very nice way. He says, do all your actions as a gift to the Lord and accept all experiences in life as gift from God. Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, Ishvara Prasada Buddhi. So every action is an Ishvara Arpana and everything you get back from the Lord is Prasada. Right? And Krishna says in the third chapter, Egneshishtha Sanasanto Mucchinti Karma Sarva Kilmi Chayi. A person who eats food as Prasada, he is free from all Papa. Sarva Kilmi Chayi, all defects. And what is Prasada? You work and you should ensure that you deserve the food on your plate. Prasada doesn't mean offering in the temple. This whole universe is the Lord. So you have to offer to this Lord. What do you offer to the Lord? Your work. Right? So, evening when you sit with food on your plate, you should say, do I deserve this food? Understand? Do I deserve this food? Have I contributed to this world? Have I worked enough today that I deserve this food. If you deserve, it is prasada. Vishwarupa Ishwara, Ishwara is Vishwarupa. You have worked to Vishwa, to the Ishwara and Vishwarupa, you have worked. And you have got this prasada on your plate. So every food which is on your plate is a prasada if you have sufficiently worked that day. That is what is called as Yajna Shishta Sinasanto Muchyante Sarva Pilbishati. Understood? So you have to work. Every day you have to ensure that you work and the food on your plate you should deserve. And in Tamil there is a very nice word for a person who doesn't deserve the food on his plate. Thandachoru they call it. Thandachoru means a person who doesn't deserve the food on his plate. Understood? He, like the food that you feed is waste. Instead of putting it in the dustbin, you are putting it through him, it goes to the commode. That is called Thandachoru. So you should not be that. You should not be just a conduit for food to go from dining hall to toilet. You are not just a pipe. Understood? You have to work. Right? You have to work. And if you work, then the food on your plate is prasada. Right? This is karma. This is the gist of karma yoga. Now, karma yoga frees you from depending upon this world for security. You no longer worry about it. The Lord is just will take care of me. I just need to ensure that I am useful to this world. If I am useful to this world, the Lord will take care of me. That's all. Right? Now, the second step is Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana Yoga cuts your dependence upon this world for pleasure. We think pleasure comes from all these sense organs by their contact with sense objects. Now, this is a wrong opinion. This is a wrong notion. Why? Because pleasure doesn't come from the sense object. Because if pleasure comes from the sense object, then everyone should get the same pleasure from every sense object. Which is not the case. One person like laddu, one person like kara, one person like rasgulla, another person like gulab jamun. The amount of pleasure each one gets from the same object is different, depending upon the people. So which means that object doesn't have that. And also the same sense object, different people eat and they get different amount of pleasure. Also the same person eats, first one you give, it gives one amount of pleasure, second, less pleasure, third, still less, fourth, you will say enough, I don't want it. Why, what happened? First one you like the first rasgulla, the fourth rasgulla, why are you saying no? The same object, same rasgulla, so which means the pleasure doesn't come from that. And even for the same person, different times, the same rasgulla will not give the same pleasure, right? Now, let us say like the day after Ekadasi, Dwadasi day, you offer rasagulla to the Lord and you eat it, you like rasagulla, pleasure over pleasure. So much pleasure you get. Understand? The same rasagulla, suppose your father likes it, he is passed away, it is his shraddha. You offer the rasagulla on the shraddha for your father and you have to take it as a shraddha prasada, as a child of your father, you have to eat it. Now, that rasagulla will not enjoy at all. Right? So, the same rasagulla, right? The same rasagulla, right? Which you have to eat it as a shraddha. You don't, it is sweet, but you don't enjoy eating it. You will cry, oh my father likes it. You will cry while eating it. Why? Because pleasure doesn't come from the object. Understand? Now, you will say, oh, but who will, going for pain is a sadism. Are we sad? No, let's see. Suppose you trek for something, your legs will be paining, but still you will be enjoying the pain. Or you go to a gym, you work out, your muscles will be paining, your heart will be crying, why are you doing so much of cardio? Like, suffering. Your heart is crying, your muscles are crying, but then you enjoy it. You say, yeah, today I did a very good workout. So pain does not mean pain does not mean sorrow, pleasure does not mean happiness. So the connection between pleasure and pain and happiness and sorrow is all in the mind. That is, the objects don't have any inherent pleasure or pain. So in Vedanta we have what is called the dog bone philosophy. So there was a dog, and the dog found a bone, a very dry bone. How dry was the bone? It was bone dry. Because for dry, the adjective we use it is bone dry. It was so dry, not an iota of moisture in that bone. A dry bone the dog got. And the dog took it, it bit the bone, the bone broke, the bone pricked its teeth, its gums, blood came, and the dog said, ah, so tasty bone. Where did the taste come from? Not from the bone, from the dog's own gum. And the dog was very logical. Before biting the bone, I did not get pleasure, I did not taste blood. When I bite the bone, I am getting taste of blood. So the bone comes from the blood comes from the bone. And the harder I bite the bone, the more blood I get. So it is 100% sure that it comes from the bone. Same thing about pleasure. Pleasure does not come from the object. The more you have desire towards something, the more pleasure it will give. Less desire, less pleasure. Understood? So it doesn't come from there, it comes from within. Now if you go to neuroscience, if you ask a neuroscientist, they will say, yes, there is some chemical in the brain, dopamine is there. When dopamine is secreted in the brain, you feel pleasure. And the reward centers are there in the brain. So now you want pleasure, the problem is very simple. Can I generate my dopamine in my brain at will? If I can do that, I don't need to depend on anything in this world. Right? If I can at will generate whatever dopamine which is needed in the brain by myself, then I don't need to depend on this world for pleasure. Can I do that? Yes, you can do that. And meditation? By meditation, that's one of the things which you can do. Your dopamine in your brain is under your control now. If you say, I want to enjoy pleasure, yeah, close your eyes and sit and do some standard set of exercises, you will get pleasure. It's absolutely time-tested procedures are there where you can just generate, you can just get pleasure in your brain. You become independent of this world for any pleasure. You don't need any rasagulla, you don't need any drugs or no movie, nothing is needed. No social media, nothing is needed for you to get pleasure. If you want pleasure, anytime you want, just close your mind, eyes, do a procedure, you will get pleasure. Follow. Now, so once you know this, then you become independent of this world for pleasure. Right? Then what happens? No one can blackmail you emotionally. No one can say, if you are my friend, drink this. You say, like, I don't care. Right? That is emotional blackmail. Right? You are my friend? No, for me you do this. You say, like, nothing in you. I don't care. Right? If I want pleasure, I know. I can get my own pleasure. I don't depend on you. I don't depend on anything outside for my pleasure. If I want pleasure, I know how to get my pleasure. I can just close my eyes and I can put myself into a state where none of these local things can match. Now, it gives you the independence. It gives you, you know, like, your remote control is now your own hand. Like, otherwise your remote control is someone else's hand. They press one button, you start dancing according to their feelings. That will never happen. You are independent. Now, this freedom, complete freedom from anything else, people, objects, situations, this freedom you get. That is what it guarantees. How to get this? Clear? So, there are some notes here. So, we will just go through this. So, what is the definition of meditation? Continuous flow of related thoughts as a purely mental activity. Right? So meditation, when you say it's a very general word, people use it in so many different ways. But the official definition for meditation is continuous flow of related thoughts as a purely mental activity. Now, if it is not a purely mental activity, it is a preparation for meditation, but it is not meditation. Does it classify as meditation? So if you are doing japa with counting on the mala, that is not meditation. Okay? Or if you are counting on your fingers, or you are doing archana, or you sit but then you are moving your tongue, you are moving your lips, then that is not under meditation. That is a preparation for meditation, but not meditation as such. Meditation has to be absolutely zero deliberate movement. Right? Then that classifies as meditation. Clear? And it should be a continuous flow of related thoughts. Sajatiya pratyaya pravaha. So that is what is the definition. Yes. Fine. So related thoughts, like suppose there are various kinds of meditation which we will see, right? Like Lila Dhyana. Like you remember, for example, in your mind, you start, you say, today I am going to meditate upon Ramayana. You sit and then say, okay, Dasharatha was the king of Ayodhya. He was ruling, he had three wives, Kausalya, Kaikeyi, Sumitra. He did not have any children. He did Yaga, Rishishringa came, he did the Yaga, Putrakamiti Yaga, Payasa came, he gave Payasa to his wife. And then Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata, Satrughna were born. You mentally you can go to the entire Ramayana. Related thoughts. This is what will be related thoughts. Now, this is meditation. If you do it without any deliberate movement, just purely mentally, this is called Leela Dhyana. Or you can do Manasa Puja. You can imagine the Lord in the center of your heart, and then you can do like Panchopachara Puja, right? You can say Ganda, Pushpa, Dhupa, Deepa, Nivedya, like you can offer. You can do a full Panchopachara Puja or even Dashopachara Puja. You can do mentally as a Manasa Puja. That is also meditation, right? So all these things are, or you can say value meditation, for example. So you say, okay, today I will meditate upon Satya, truthfulness. What is truthfulness? Why is it important? What will happen if I am not truthful? What are the conditions where it will be difficult to be truthful? Who are the people in our Siddhartha who have been truthful? You can meditate upon truthfulness, right, as a value. That is called value meditation. Right? So it should be related thoughts, and it should be continuous, no distraction, and purely mental. Now if you are looking at a book and then doing parayana, that is parayana, not meditation. So for meditation, if you want to meditate upon Gita, suppose if you say I will meditate today upon 12th chapter of the Gita, so you should have first memorized it. So once you memorize it, now you can convert, mentally you can chant 12th chapter, that will become a meditation. So it should serve the objective of, because your goal is to be free from this. Jivan Mukti is the goal. Okay. So towards Jivan Mukti, if you can link whatever your topic of meditation, then it is fine. Understand? You cannot, suppose if you say, okay, today I will meditate upon Maxwell's equation. Fine. That is purely mental activity, you can think about it and all that. But it might not have direct correlation to Jivan Mukti. So that is concentration, that is okay. Like that is a good mental thought experiment and all that you can do. But then that will not contribute to Jivan Mukti, so it is not considered as meditation. Right?
Only meditation has
some
dependence
of anchor on the object, right? We'll come to that. So that is the next topic. So there are two types of meditation. One is called upasana, the other one is called nitisthyasana. Right? Upasana is based on imagination. Nitisthyasana is enquiry into the truth. So whatever you said, that is nitisthyasana. That is one of the types of meditation. The other type is upasana. So upasana prepares the mind and nitisthyasana is the final objective. Ultimately, you need to know who am I. Now, that inquiry will be nididhyasana. Now, to prepare the mind for that, all the other things will be there, which is upasana. Okay? And purposes, what is the purpose? So the first purpose given here is like to reprogram your subconscious mind. Suppose, as I told you, value meditation. If you say, suppose, often I get into a bout of anger. I want to become free from anger. I want to become a very patient person. Now, you're at the time when the trigger for anger is there, your logical thinking doesn't work. Okay? Because decisions are made at the subconscious mind. Sri Ramakrishna puts in a very nice way. You can teach a parrot to sing Krishna Rama Govinda, Krishna Rama Govinda. But when a cat comes, it will say ki 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 ki. Because when the situation comes, it is our subconscious mind which actually comes in. So, if we have to change our behavior, we have to reprogram our subconscious mind. Now, how do you reprogram your subconscious mind? So, meditation is a tool for that. Right? Your value meditation is a way to reprogram your subconscious mind. When you do the whole meditation process, your mind gets into a state called alpha state, where the boundary between your voluntary thinking and your subconscious mind, your conscious subconscious mind, become very thin. So whatever you think in that particular state, you can actually voluntarily think, but that will get deeply embedded in your subconscious mind. So next time when the situation comes, your mind is already reprogrammed, it will run the new program. So meditation is a technique by which you put your mind into that alpha state and where you are given the freedom to reprogram. That is why when you are sitting for meditation, if your mind is roaming around and thinking about unwanted things, immediately stop your meditation, get up and distract it. Do think about something else. Because if you think about some unwanted thing during your meditation, that will get embedded and then later you have to spend double the effort to remove it out. Because ultimately you have to remove it. So ensure that when you meditate, you think about things only which you want to get deeply embedded into your subconscious. Only good things you need to think about. Okay? So meditation has that purpose. And the other one I told you, meditation gives you the first-hand experience that you don't depend upon people, objects or situations for your happiness. You will feel tremendous joy in your meditation. Right? And Krishna says, buddhi grahyam atindriyam. Right? You get a sukha which is tangible, you can really experience it, but it is atindriyam. It is absolutely non-sensory. So you have that, you get the key to joy, right? It will be Ananda Lahari, they call it, right? Waves and waves of happiness, you can just generate by your own only. You are given the key, you can generate how much ever dopamine you want, right? So waves and waves of joy, you can just generate by yourself. You don't need to depend on anyone else, anything else, right? Now that becomes possible, and of course, that also is a pitfall. So Gaudapada in his, Mandukya Karika, like, he gives the four obstacles to knowledge. Because finally meditation is a way for nididhyasana, to get knowledge. But then, like, four obstacles are, one is tamas, you might fall asleep. And second thing is rajas, your mind might be roaming around. And third is kashaya, which is like your subconscious memories will come out, which you have to resolve finally. And the fourth is this rasaswala, like you get stuck because you get so much of pleasure in meditation, but that is not the object of meditation. That is needed so that you become free from dependence on this world for pleasure, but then you have to go beyond that. So ultimately knowledge is the goal. So you will have pleasure, you will be able to just generate pleasure in your mind at will, right? And then meditation helps you to develop a personal relationship with Ishvara. Right? By all this Leela, Dhyana, Manasa, Puja and all, you can develop deep personal relationship with God. And meditation quietens the mind to that extent that if you look in, the knowledge will dawn from within by itself. Gita says, at this chapter Krishna says, it will shine forth from within Gita. Like if you deeply, when you get into meditation, the Lord Himself will teach you, who am I, what is the purpose of the world. So the Lord Himself will become the inner Guru and he will make you understand all these things very easily. So meditation gives you that clarity, right? So that is another purpose of meditation. So these are the four purposes of meditation. And now you may say, oh, what about siddhis? Patanjali Yoga Sutra talks about so much. Fully Vibhuti Pada is there. Gita does not talk about anything, right? Gita has got the description of the jnani, description of the Jivan Mukta, like Chitta Prajna Lakshana comes in the second chapter, 14th chapter, like Gunatita Lakshana comes, then 13th chapter, the jnani Lakshana comes, and so many, and then 12th chapter, Parabhakta Lakshana comes, so many places, and Asuri Sampat in 16th chapter, so many places he describes the qualities of a jnani, qualities of the person who has reached the goal, right? The person, the Jivan Mukta who has reached the goal. Krishna gives descriptions of that person in so many chapters, with so many shlokas he gives. And how many places has he mentioned about, you know, reading others' mind, levitating, astral travel, hearing what is happening, knowing what is happening in the past, knowing what will happen in the future, knowing what is my mother doing now. Nothing, zero. Or bringing things out of thin air, transporting things, or going and appearing in anywhere you want. Like so many siddhis are, you know, like anima, mahima, lahima, so many things which are described in other books. Now, there are at least 40-50 shlokas in the Gita which talks about Jivan Mukta Lakshana, the Lakshana of a Jivan Mukta. Zero mention of any of these. Understood? Absolutely zero mention in the Gita of any power, any supernatural power, anything. Zero. So you have to be very, very clear, none of these things come under Jivan Mukta Lakshana. This is not the goal. These are all distractions. Clear? They may come, they may not come, they are distractions. It is, you have to just ignore them. You just have to focus. Right? So, what is the goal? Very clear. Freedom from Shatrughu is the goal. Freedom from Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya and gaining Jnana, Bhakti, Vairagya. That's all is the goal. Not even vision of God. Ishwara Darshana is not the goal. Nowhere he mentions. Nowhere in the Jivan Mukta Lakshana Krishna mentions he will be able to see God. No. It doesn't mention at all. In fact, when Arjuna says, I want to see you, Krishna shows his form. And then Arjuna says again, enough, enough, enough. Arjuna says, enough, come back to your original form. Okay. So, nowhere Krishna talks about any of these supernatural things. So, very, very clearly you have to understand what is the goal. Goal is Jivan Mukti. Jivan Mukti means Jnana, Vairagya and Bhakti. That's all. Okay. So, everything else is towards that. So, now, I have given here a selection of shlokas which are dealing with meditation. This is not a complete list, okay? This is only a partial list. And so you can take this, and this is a good place to start, okay? And you can use this for daily parayana, you can just use this for understanding in depth. So I have given the Anvaya also, by which you can identify words. And most of Indian languages, like about 80%, the words are common with Sanskrit. So the moment the Anvaya is given, you will be able to identify the words. And also meaning is given. So you will be able to correlate, okay, which word means which one from this only. Okay. So you can go through it, you can understand very easily what it means. Okay. So we will go through it. So Sanskrit will, what time do we have? It's 7 now. Okay. So the first, so this one I have kind of ordered it so that it becomes a logical sequence. Of course, most of it is already in the same order in the Gita only, because Gita itself, but only thing is Gita is an extempore one. So Krishna will take up one topic, he will give, logically he will be explaining, and then suddenly Krishna would say, oh, I didn't mention that. So then he will do a diversion, he will mention something, then he will come back to the flow, or Arjuna will interrupt Krishna with a question, then he will go and answer that question, then he will come back to the flow. So like that, because it's an extempore dialogue conversation, it has that. Like for example, the entire 8th chapter is a diversion. Like it is not in the flow. Like so, even in 4th chapter also, Arjuna asks one question: how come you told Vivaswan? How come you are saying you taught him? Then Krishna takes one diversion. He answers Arjuna's question. Then he comes back to the flow. So like that, we can find like diversions and coming back, those kind of things. So like because it is extempore. Right. So most of the places it will be a logical sequence, but there will be places where the flow gets broken. So we need to kind of put it together. And even in the 6th chapter also, he starts with something, then suddenly he thinks he has forgotten something, then he again goes back. So that way you have to do some rearrangement so that the flow becomes proper. Anyway, so let us. I have picked up some slokas. So the first thing you need to understand is the Panchakosha Viveka, right? When you say human being, we have 5 layers. Annamaya Kosha, this physical body, right? Then Pranamaya Kosha, the life in this body. Then Manomaya Kosha, the emotion, likes and dislikes. Then Buddhimaya Kosha, the concept of right and wrong, that is Buddhimaya Kosha. Then Anandamaya Kosha, where everything is stored, right? So all your karma, samskara, everything is stored in Anandamaya Kosha. Now this is at an individual level. Beyond this, as pure consciousness. So 5 koshas and beyond the 5 koshas. Now this is the hierarchy you have. Okay. So this physical body is whatever is common between a living body and dead body is Annamaya Kosha. What is extra in a living body, that is Pranamaya Kosha. Your digestive system, your breathing, blood circulation, your temperature, homeostasis, all the things, your health, allergy, everything comes under Pranamaya Kosha, the physiological part, which the doctors usually treat. Okay. Then comes your likes and dislikes. What do you like? Which book you like? Do you like khara? Do you like sweet? Do you like to go to forest? Do you like to go to beaches? What hobbies you like? You know, all those things, your likes and dislikes, everything comes under Manomaya Kosha. Then Vijnanamaya Kosha is your ideology, your belief system, right? Whatever our Yuval Noah Harari talked about in the book, no, like Sapiens, belief system, ideology, right? What do you believe in? Why do you think what is right? What is wrong, right? So what do you believe in? That is your Vijnanamaya Kosha. Why do you think this is right? Why do you think this is wrong, right? What is duty? What is morality? All those things are under the Vijnanamaya Kosha. Then the Karana Sharira or Anandamaya Kosha, that is just a storage. Everything gets stored there even when you are sleeping. When you wake up, again it will be loaded from there and into your Manomaya Kosha and Vijnanamaya Kosha, and then you start functioning. So the storage is in the Karana Sharira or Anandamaya Kosha. Now these are the 5, and your real Jivatva as an individual, you are that storage. Right? So very nicely, simple example you can understand is like this. Suppose you are working on a paper, you have typed it in, you have got your Word document, everything, and you are carrying it in your pen drive, you have it. And then you go to visit your friend, and then you have it, your friend asks, hey, what are you working on? And then you tell him, this is what I'm working on. And then he asks some questions, how about this, how about that, how are you going to do this, how are you going to do that, what happens if it is like this? Then you think, oh yeah, it's a good idea, like, yeah, I never thought about it, and you want to note it down, you don't want to forget it. Now you ask your friend, hey, like, I have a pen drive, do you have a laptop? Your friend says, yes, yes, you can take my laptop. You open his laptop, you power it on, you plug in your pen drive into that laptop, and you open the document on your pen drive, you edit it, and then you do something, then suddenly the laptop says, battery low, battery is. Then you immediately say, like, a battery is low. Then immediately you save your file, and then you ask another friend, hey, do you have another laptop? He says, yes, yes. Then you shut down this laptop, plug out your pen drive, plug it into your another laptop, power it on, continue editing there, then save it there, take your pen drive, put it in your pocket and return the laptop. So now this pen drive is your Karana Sharira, Ananda Maikunda, where all the storage is there. And the physical laptop is the Stula Sharira, your body, right? And the mind, whatever runs in that, is the Sushma Sharira, the operating system, the software, everything. So what do you do? You cannot edit directly without a laptop. In the pen drive, you cannot edit it. So what do? You borrow a laptop, right? And then you plug in your pen drive, and then you edit it. And then once done, work is done, you shut it down, take the pen drive out. That is exactly what you do life after life. You get on body, work on your samskara, work on your, you try to become a better person. And then when the body is no longer useful for you, save everything, pull it out, go to the next laptop. That's all. So this which you keep carrying, that is what is you. Right? That is the Karana Sharira. That is the Jiva, it is called. And this is called Sharira. The laptop and the operating system, the software it runs on that, they are all called Sharira. Stula Sharira and Sushma Sharira. But the Jiva is the Karana Sharira. The Jivatva is the storage. That is the real you. So ultimate goal is what? To improve your file on the pen drive. Doesn't matter what laptop it is. Doesn't matter whether it is a Mac or whether it is a Windows or whether it is an old one, new one, doesn't matter. Right? What you want is the pen drive, the file, you want to make it better. That's all. So that is the goal. Life after life, make sure that you keep improving your file and keep carrying it. Finally, yes, you publish it and get your PhD. Jivan Mukti. Right? So that is the goal. For that, all these things are means. Right? So what does it say? It says, Indriyani Parani Avuhu Indriyebhya Paramanaha Manasastu Parabuddhihi Yah Buddhele Parasastu Saha. Okay. So, Indriyani Parani Avuhu. Now, this Avuhu is a very interesting word. Avuhu means it is told so. Which means Krishna says, this is not my knowledge, this is what I learned from my guru. It is not Santa Sahitya. Like it is not, because in our tradition, if someone says, I have come up with a brilliant new theory, we ask him, okay, using your theory, can you explain the Prasthana Traya? We have Gita, Brahma Sutra, Upanishad. Using your theory, can you coherently explain all the three scriptures? If you say yes, you can, then we accept your theory. If you say like, no, partially it can answer, but there are some slokas in the Upanishads, some mantras in the Upanishads, some slokas in the Gita which this theory cannot explain, then we say, okay, you go and improve your theory and come, then we will talk. Unless your theory can completely explain all the 10 major Upanishads, all the mantras in that, and all the 555 sutras and Brahma Sutra, and all the 700 slokas in the Gita. If your new theory can explain with proper logic all these, then your theory can be considered as a possibility we can discuss. Till then, you work on your theory, ensure that it aligns here, then only the discussion can be proceeded. So this is the tradition. So even Krishna says, Ahuhu, this is how it has been told. Why? Because this shloka, he has picked it up from Kathopanishad. Lot of shlokas in the Gita, Krishna has taken it up from Kathopanishad. Because that's what he studied in his Gurukulam. So, this shloka also is almost the same identical in Kathopanishad. So, he says, Indriyani Parani Ahuhu. It has been told that the Indriyani, the senses are better. Better than what? You have to fill up the blank. Sense object. Because senses interact with sense object. So senses are better than the sense object, are higher, right? And Indriyebhya Paramanaha. But your mind is more powerful than the sense object. And Manasastu Parabuddhihi. But your buddhi is higher than the sense, than the mind. Buddhehe Parasaha Tu Saha. Saha means Karana Sharira, the Anandamaya Kosha. So the jiva is higher than the buddhi also, right? Because the jiva is the final identity. Everything else is only for that, right? So Katopashit puts it in a very nice way, the Ratha Kalpana as a chariot, right? The chariot is there, the body is the chariot, and the horses are the sense organs. The road is the sense object. The charioteer is the buddhi, and the rope which connects the horse to the charioteer, that is the manas, and the passenger is the jiva. Okay, so finally the jiva should be the one who is the deciding factor. Understand? So the horses must be under the control of the rope, and the rope should be held tightly by the charioteer. So senses, manas, buddhi, and the charioteer should listen to the passenger. Like you just, one auto is going, you stop the auto and say, hey, like I want to go to Mekiri Circle, are you coming? He says like, no, I am going to Majestic, do you want to come there? Like you should go where you want to go, not where the auto driver wants to go, right? So the charioteer should be under the control of the passenger. That is what it says. Buddhehe parataha tu saha. Saha means passenger. And buddhi is the charioteer. The charioteer should listen to the passenger. And the horses should listen to the charioteer. So that hierarchy of control is mentioned here. If this hierarchy of control is correctly established, then you can attain whatever goal you want in life. Clear? So then how do you attain this control? How do you bring your mind and buddhi all under your control? That is the next one. Yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshasya karmasu yukta svapna avabodasya yogaha bhavati dukkaha. So you have to train your mind, you have to train your body so that they understand who is the master. How do you train them? Tapas. What is tapas? Not something very hyperdha. Gita gives a list of tapas, all down to earth. Suppose if you say, whatever happens, I will not shout. That is a tapas. Gita calls it Vangmayam tapas. Right? So, like this, Gita gives a list of tapas. Here, in this shloka, it says, Yukta Ahara Viharasya. You decide what to eat, what not to eat. You decide when to eat, when not to eat. You decide how much to eat. You should decide. You should not say, oh, midnight, I'm feeling hungry, let me munch something. No. Then you are giving the freedom to your tongue. You are not exercising your freedom over your body. So you have to teach your body, you have to train your mind, who is the master, by your everyday life. You decide when you have to wake up. You keep an alarm at 5 o'clock, you don't press snooze. You wake up. Why do you have to do that? Why do you have to follow discipline? Because you want to tell your mind, I am the master, you are the slave. You have to teach your horse, right? Your horse is body and mind, or your horse? I am the master. I decide where you go. I decide what you do. You cannot do whatever you want. Clear? So, to establish this hierarchy of control, you have to follow discipline. Right? Then, when you sit for meditation and tell your mind, now is the time for meditation, sit and meditate, your mind will obey. If you have not established this hierarchy of control, if you have not trained your mind, if you have not given this message clearly that you are my slave to your mind will not obey. Understand? So, to do that, you have to follow this. Right? So, it is yukta ahara viharasya yukta cheshasya karmasu. Right? So, how much of work you need to do, how much of relaxing, when is the time for work, when is the time for entertainment, when is the time for lunch, when is the time for dinner, what time to wake up, what time to go to sleep, everything you decide first. Don't lead a arbitrary life. You put a timetable, put a schedule, and tell your mind, tell your body, this is the timetable we are going to follow. Your body will say, like, no, I am hungry, I feel sleepy, you say, like, nothing doing, follow this. This is the tendency. Right? So you establish your control over your body and mind by following this discipline. And suppose if you say, oh, this horse is not obeying me, let me cut the horse leg. That is not a solution. Right? Weakening the horse is not a solution. Because the weak horse will not be able to take you to your destination. Your goal is not just to have a horse under your control. Your goal is to use this horse and reach your destination. So you should not weaken the horse. You have to strengthen the horse. But you should have a horse under your control. So in the name of tapasya, you should not weaken your body. You have to strengthen your body. Right? So Krishna, there is another shloka in the 17th chapter, he says, is it why, like, you should not torture your body in the name of tapasya. Because ultimately your body will not be useful then. So you have to have control, but then you have to have it, make it stronger also. So that is important. Right? So all the tapasya which is prescribed in the Gita is for the mind, but through the body. Saying that I will wake up at 5 o'clock, is that tapasya for the body or for the mind? For the body. Body has to wake up. But then you are training your mind. You are not, you should not weaken the body, but you should strengthen the body, you should strengthen the mind, but you should establish the hierarchy of control. So that is how intelligently you have to design your tapasya. Right? And Gita gives guidance. The 17th chapter is a list of shlokas where he gives examples of tapasya. Fine. Anyway, that is Karma Yoga part. We will not take that up now. So, basically, regulation and moderation are needed so that you send a very clear message to your body and mind, who is the master and who is the servant. That has to be done. Once you have done that, then you can go for meditation. Now, this, as I told you, know, like, that is 17, because Krishna tells everything, then suddenly removes, so I forgot to tell something. Then the 17th, 16th, 17th, 18th, like those shlokas, he tells about regulation and all that, which is actually more of Karma Yoga, which he is supposed to have told much before. But then he has forgotten, then he goes back and then he tells that, then he comes back and does all that. Anyway, so the 6th, 10th, one shloka, he summarizes the entire meditation. The entire, whatever he wants to tell about meditation is in one shloka, which is the 10th shloka. Okay. Very, very loaded shloka. Yogi yunjita tatatam atmanam rahasya sthitah ekahi yatachittatma nirashir aparigrahah. Okay. So, here he describes meditation by pointing out 6 reasons which obstruct meditation. What are the obstructions for meditation? He gives a list of 6. He says, if you remove these 6 obstructions, meditation will automatically come. See, meditation is like going to sleep. You cannot say, oh, okay, let me go to sleep. You cannot deliberately go to sleep. What do? You say, okay, let me lie down. Let me stop all activity. Let me close my door and window so that there is no sound. You cut the sound. Let me switch off the light. No light. Let me cover myself with a bed sheet so my skin will not get any sensation. So like this, you cut off all the distractions for your sleep and then you wait for sleep to come. Nidra Devi has to come and bless her, bless you. You cannot, you know, extract from her. You have to prepare for sleep and then you have to wait for sleep to come. Then sleep has to come. So that is exactly for meditation also. So you identify what are all the distractions which will stop me from meditating and you cut that and then meditation will happen automatically. Okay. So that is what Krishna says here. He identifies 6 distractions. And cutting those 6 distractions is called solitude. So 6 solitudes is listed here. So the first one is, if you want to meditate, first is rahasi, right? It's environmental solitude. You have to sit alone. Group meditation you can do, but each one has to meditate by himself only. right? You cannot say, hey, like today I am busy, can you please meditate for 10 minutes for me? You can't tell your friend. Okay, someone else cannot meditate for you. You only have to meditate for yourself. So meditation is a personal affair. Someone else cannot do that for you. So you have to sit in a place where there is no distraction, right? So that is rahati, environmental solitude. You have to sit in a place where there is no one else around. Even if they are around, they don't come and disturb you. Then sthita has physical solitude. Your own body is a distraction, right? So you have to sit in such a way that it is comfortable, straight posture where you can forget your body. Because your body itself is external to you. It's a distraction. So that is why that asana, it is called asana, pranayama, they are all for this, right? So that you can forget your body for at least 10-15 minutes. You should be able to forget your body. Details will come later. Okay, this one shloka, the 10th shloka is given summary. Then the subsequent shloka he explains it expanded. Okay. Then ekaki. So relational solitude. So you have so many roles and responsibilities in the world, right? As a brother, as a son, as a student, as a citizen, like, you know, so many roles and responsibilities you have. During meditation, at least temporarily, you should be able to set everything aside. Keep everything aside and say later, not now. And Paramatanji puts it very nicely, it is to do that, you take up an alternative identity. You say, I am a seeker of truth. I am a devotee of this deity. I am a student of Vedanta. I am a student of Gita. You take up another role and responsibility to counter your worldly role and responsibility. That is called ekaki, right? Basically, you say like, for 20 minutes, I am not any of these roles and responsibilities. I have got no duty for at least 15-20 minutes, right? Then, yata chitta atma, that is emotional solitude. So basically, like, all your grudges, guilt, regrets, anxiety, fear, jealousy, hatred, everything you have to keep aside, right? So only when you sit for meditation, it will come, oh, that guy, today he saw me on the way to the nest. He didn't smile at me. What is he thinking? Is he angry with me? No, all those. First, you have to cut off all that. Emotional solitude, right? All your full, you know, like whatever in your life, whatever scolding anyone did will come to your mind only with meditation. So, you have to resolve all of them. You cannot suppress them. You have to resolve them. Now, how do you resolve them? It is very important here. And also you will have so much of guilt. Oh, I should not have done that. I should not have done this. Now, there is something in psychology called Hamelin's reason. I will tell you what it means. Okay. It is there, like the equivalent is there in our tradition also. Very simple. Now, I'll give you the logic, then you can apply the logic later. Okay. So suppose, let us say you pick up something, remember something. The stupidest thing is your life. The one thing in your life which you regret the most, that, oh, I should not have done that. Take that mentally, let us do a mental exercise. Take that as an example. Okay. The biggest regret in your life, the one thing in your life which you are like praying day and night, oh Lord, give me one opportunity to undo what I have done. Or if I was given another chance, I would not have done that. All of us will have something. Some regret which you have, the deepest regret you have. Take it as an example. Now, you think, when doing that action, what did you think? Actually, you would have thought, what a smart guy I am and doing this. And I tell you in life, anytime you are thinking that I am so smart to do this, be careful. It's a trap. You are going to regret for the rest of the life for that. So, whichever now you are regretting that I should not have done that, actually you would have thought yourself so smart to do that. Or you would have at least said, I can handle it. I know, I can handle it. You would have, so at that time you thought it was the right thing to do. Or at that time you might have thought that was the smartest thing to do also sometimes. And now you know better. Now you regret it. Okay. Whatever regret in your life you have, if you analyze it, at that time, why you did it, you would have thought that was the right thing to do. Clear? So, forgive yourself. You thought that was the right thing to do. You had a misunderstanding. You didn't know that was a stupid thing to do. So you did it. So forgive yourself. Forgive your anger self. Right? It is okay. At that time, I did a mistake, yes, because I thought that was the right thing to do. Now I know that was the wrong thing to do. Now I know how stupid I was at that time. Now I will not repeat it. So, using this one line of thought, what this is the truth. It's not, we're not imagining anything. This is the truth. So using this, you clear all your regrets in your life. Every regret you have in your life, right? Every guilt that you have in your life, you forgive yourself because at that time you thought you were doing the right thing. Clear? This concept is clear? Because unless you do this, you will not be able to meditate. It's important. Because you will not be able to sit and meditate unless you have completely cleared yourself from all guilt and regret. Once you have understood this, now comes the second problem. Gratitude. Oh, that person should not have done this. Why did he do this? He did such a bad thing to me. Now, apply the same logic. He did it because he thought it was the right thing. Your own logic is applied here also. The same logic which you apply to forgive yourself, now you have to apply for the other person also. When he did that, he thought he was doing the right thing. That is why he did it, that is he would not have done it. Understood? So, if you have a grudge against someone, it is just that you don't understand why he did it, that's all. Suppose you are going on the road, okay, suddenly one guy comes in a bike and you are standing at the signal, signal is red. He comes from behind you and he rushes, cuts the signal, goes. What will you think? Stupid guy. Right? Or you think, this guy is violating the signal. Then you might even curse him. These guys will get to know only when there will be some accident. You know, like you might have all kinds of thoughts. But how do you know? Maybe this guy got a phone call from his mother at home saying, hey, I've got a heart attack, please come immediately. So he's rushing. You don't know. How can you judge without knowing? Maybe if you are in his position, you would have done, you have gone still faster. Right? Understand? If you were in his situation, maybe you would have done still worse things. You don't know the situation. So don't judge. So similarly, even all your grudges, why did this person do this? Why did this person do this? Why did he tell this? Why did he attack? Everything has got only one simple answer. He thought that was the right thing to do at that time. That's all. Simple. Understand? It applies to everyone. So if you have a grudge, and if that person is still alive, you can just go and ask him, hey, you did this, tell me, why do you think that was right? You ask him, he will give an explanation. He said, you are doing this, like, hey, I was standing in front of you, like, you pushed me, why did you push me? Then he will tell you, there was a scorpion there, you didn't see it. I pushed you because the scorpion was about to bite you. You don't know about the scorpion, you don't know it. You only remember about this guy pushed me. You didn't talk to him. You didn't ask him why. So you think this guy gave me a taka. You think, oh, he pushed me. I almost fell. If you go and ask him, he will tell you why he pushed you. Then you will be thankful to him actually. So most of the things which we have grudges, we hate people, we say this, actually there's a good reason for it. We don't have the patience to go and talk to the person, ask the person why, what is your logic, what is the reason. And we keep carrying such grudges with us. And often, many of the people already died. We don't even have an opportunity now to go and ask for explanation. Understood? So, forgive everyone. Forgive everyone because the truth is that person did that because he thought that was the right thing. I don't know why. But he knows why. But I cannot ask him. So I have to give the benefit of doubt to that person and I will have to tell him, I don't know why, but I believe you did the right thing. So forgive. Actually you are not forgiving, you are actually like, you don't know the reason, so you are saying, okay, I don't know the reason, that's all. Only if he did a mistake, you have to forgive, no? Actually he has not done a mistake. You think he has done a mistake because you don't know the reason. So forgive everyone. Remove all grudges from your mind. Using this one tool, you have to resolve all your guilt, all your regret, all your grudges against yourself and against everyone. If you don't do this, you will not be able to meditate. When you meditate, this will come in your mind. Because when you meditate, you go deep into your subconscious, so all these things will come out. It's called Kashaya. Now, this you can resolve only by applying your mind intelligently and clear everyone. So, ultimately, you should not have any regret, no grudge against yourself or against anyone. That clean mind is needed for meditation. That is what is called as Yata Chitta Atma. And another thing you can do is, everything happens by the will of the Lord. So, whatever happened in my life and whatever is going to happen in my life, everything is by His will only. So, I will be at peace. He knows how to run this world. He doesn't need my advice. He can handle it. And so, have faith in the Lord and you can in one shot resolve all your anxiety, fear, regret. Because everything has come by Him only, by His wish only. Like you say, oh Lord, such a thing happened. He only signed the check. Unless His will, it will not come to you. The very fact that that happened means it has come through Him. Like He has, He thinks that's the right thing for you. That is why He has signed it. That is why it has come in your life. So everything that has happened in your life is by His will. And everything that is going to happen in your life is also by His will only. So where is the anxiety? Right? Why should I worry? This is Krishna says, Voktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram sukhrutam sarvabhutanam jnatva mam shanti mrityate. He says, like, I am the well-wisher of everyone in this world. So I am your greatest well-wisher. Right? The Lord is your greatest well-wisher. And He is omniscient and omnipotent. He says, Voktaram, Yajna Tapasam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. He says, I am the supreme controller of the entire universe. And I am your well-wisher. Now when you put these two together, then Jnatvama Shantim Prasiddhi. So if you know this, then you have peace of mind. The Lord, everything that happens is happening by the will of the Lord. Everything which is going to happen is by His will only. And He is my well-wisher. So why should I worry? So now where does the problem come? Problem comes because He is your well-wisher, no? But His well-wishing is for your spiritual development, not material development. He is your well-wisher. But His well-wishing is for you to become a Jivan Mukta. For your spiritual development, He is a well-wisher. So if
there is a material success which will go against your spiritual development, he will remove that material success. Right? If for your spiritual development, if a failure is needed, that failure he will give you in your life. You will think, oh, there's a failure in my life. But he knows that that failure is important for your spiritual development. So he will give it to you. So whenever you have a problem in life, you have to ask yourself, what lesson does the Lord want me to learn from this? What lesson does the Lord want me to learn from this? Try to ask that question. Then, if you understand that, you will know, yes, the best thing has happened. Because he is your well-wisher. Only what is good for your spiritual development will come to you in your life. And everything that has come to your life is through him only. So you don't need to go and complain to him. He knows it. He only gives it to you. It is like, you know, you are only going and complaining to the person who has given it to you. So you can only ask him, oh Lord, I am not able to understand why this is happening to me. Please tell me what I should learn. Tell me why it is happening to me. You are not rejecting it. You are asking for explanation. Tell me what I should learn from this. I am not able to understand. Then he will teach you, you will understand and keep going ahead. That is what is Yathachittatma. Right? So, you have to resolve all your emotional problems by applying these rules. Right? Then, Nirashihi, ambitional solitude. So, be free from all worldly agenda, at least during meditation. Right? During meditation, keep everything aside. Okay? It's okay to have ambitions in life. As long as they are dharmic, you should have ambitions in life. Right? But during meditation, keep everything aside. Right? Then, aparigraha, possessional solitude. So, nirashi is about what you want to achieve. Aparigraha is about what you already have. Right? So, free from all claims of ownership, trusteeship, controllership. Oh, without me, this project will not happen. Without me, what will this person do? Without me, nothing will happen. Don't worry. Right? Before 50 years, the world was running without you. After 50 years, the world will run without you. You being here is just an accident. Without you, everything will happen. The Lord does not need your help to run this world. Okay, that you can understand. With you or without you, because of you or in spite of you, the world will run. So, don't think that you are an important person. Understood? So, just at least during meditation, at least keep all your ambition, you know, your responsibilities. Like, you know, you say, oh, this is my job. Without this, this is my responsibility. If I don't take care of my mother, who will take care of my mother? Nothing doing. The Lord knows how to take care of people in this world. Okay? Keep it aside. During meditation, keep everything aside and focus on meditation. That is called aparigraha. Right? If all these six solitude, if you are able to achieve, nothing is left, your mind will automatically meditate upon this self. Right? So that is what this shloka talks about. So this shloka is the core. The subsequent shloka, Krishna is going to explain how to attain all these six qualities. That's all. Right? Actually, subsequent shloka, in fact, there are few shlokas even before this also, where he explains this. Then he suddenly remembered, oh, okay, I should first summarize it. Then he gives this 10. So if you look at the shlokas in this chapter, before this 10th one, actually, he already started the topic. How to be free from people, objects, situation, samalosha, kanchana, like, you know, all those things come before this. He has already started. Then he is realizing, okay, no. I have to first give a summary, then I will go ahead. Then he goes ahead. Okay. So, the subsequent shloka, he expands on this. What does he say? First is that the drahati sita, you know. So, those two he expands. Suchau deshe pratishtaya siramasanam atmanaha. Nasi Sridham, Nasi Nisham, Chairajina Pushokaram. So he did choose a clean place, right? No foul smell, no insects running around. So it should be clean, right? And in those days, like, you know, like you have all this cow dung plaster floor and all, he's kind of keeping that in mind, right? So no scorpions running around. Like it should be in a safe place. And narcissism, narcissism, not too low, be slightly higher. Because imagine, you know, like in a forest, in one hut, cow dung plastered floor, you want to sit and meditate. One scorpion wants to run, one ant wants to go, one lizard wants to chase that ant. All the things will keep happening around you. Now you should not be disturbed. So what do? A slightly high stool, you sit. So that if some lizard wants to run, let it run under you. One rat wants to go, rat will also run under you. It don't obstruct the path of rats and lizards. But now we are sitting in such a place, that rule doesn't apply. So that Ustritam, Narcinicham, the Narcinicham doesn't apply now. But Narcinicham applies. Don't sit in a high stool like this. Why? We saw, no? Like the preparation for sleep and the preparation for meditation are same. Right? The preparation which you do for sleeping, switching off the light, switching off all sound, right? And then sitting, is exactly the same for meditation. So you want to forget your body. So what happens is, if you are tired, your body will fall asleep. Right? Like if you have, so Mandukya Karika, Gaurapada gives the reasons why you might fall asleep during meditation. When you try to meditate, he says, like, if your stomach is full, if you have, like, you are tired physically, or if you have a backlog of sleep, Nidra Shesha, he uses the word. If you are not slept for some time, right, then the body will take this opportunity to sleep. So when you sit for meditation, you can fall asleep. So ensure that when you fall, if you fall asleep, you don't fall from your chair. So you should not sit in a high place. Don't sit in the corner of a bed. Because if you fall asleep, you might fall down and hurt yourself. Okay? And if you fall asleep during meditation, don't feel guilty. It means your process is right, just that your body is tired. Okay? While sitting for meditation, if you fall asleep, it means you are doing everything correctly. Okay? Everything is correct. Just that you are either you are tired or you have a backlog of sleep, so your body is grabbing this opportunity to take some sleep. So it means your process is correct. If you do the same process, when you are not feeling sleepy, you will be able to sleep. So falling sleepy during meditation is a good sign. It means your procedure is correct. Just that you are tired. So you have to repeat the same procedure when you are not tired. Then you get into meditation. Right? So that is why Narcissism, Narcissism. Not in a high place, not in a low place. Then Stiram Asanam. It should be stable. It should not be, like, you know, unstable. Then when your body, that will become a disturbance to your meditation. Right? So basically you should be able to forget your body. That is the bottom line. Right? So Suchau Deshe Pratishtavya Stiram Asanam. Right? And here also he says, Siram Asanam Asmanaha. You should have your own drug. Don't share the drug. Because as you keep sitting on your meditation drug, like, it will kind of adjust to your body shape. So if someone else sits, then the shape will not fit. So that itself will become a disturbance for the meditation. So it is better to have your own meditation drug. Asmanaha, he says. He says, don't share your meditation drug. Right? You don't need to go for any esoteric meaning, like, you know, it is a simple meaning, like, it will automatically adjust to your physical body shape. So have your own rug. And why rug? Like, it should be a thermal insulator, right? The meditation rug should be a thermal insulator. So that, like, the cold doesn't come from the floor. Then again, like, you'll get cramped. So to avoid cramps while meditation, you should have a rug. Okay. And he'll describe the rug later. Then Narcissism, Narcissism, Chaila Ajina Kusha Uttara. How to create a rug? Chaila Ajina Kusha Uttara. So basically, like, if you remember your railway sleeper, right? How is your railway sleeper? there will be a coil inside. That is kusha. Right? Coil. Above the coil, what is there? Rectin. Right? That is adrenal. Then after that, what do? You don't directly sleep on the rectin. You put a cloth. That is chaya. Right? So, coil so that it gives a strong support, but it is a thermal insulator. On top of that, a rectin. So that, that, rectin is, thing, what is that, mold, what is melted plastic on a cloth. Right? That is rectin. Right? So, basically it is like an artificial leather. Right? Then, because your coil will have sharp edges, right, your grass, coil has sharp edges, you prick. To prevent it from pricking, you have this rectin. But then rectin cannot breathe. Like, so to make it breathable, you put a cloth on top of it. Right, so that is what is Chaila and Sushrutha. Now, of course, this is, you have to understand the motivation behind it, and you can go for replacement. Like you can just take one cotton rug, fold it 3-4 times. Now that is good enough. It is firm, right? And it is breathable, and it is a insulator. So you can sit, you can use it. So this, you have to understand why he is suggesting it, and then you can go for alternative. So any meditation rug will have all these properties. Right? So, but here we use the traditional one, Tailajira Sushrutha. Then once you have this, then tatrekagra manaktrisva yatachitendriya kriyaha. So sitting on that, what you should do? Tatra ekagram manaha krishva yatachitta indriya kriyaha upavishyasane indriya yogam atma vishuddhaye. So it comes to the ekaki, yatachittatma, those points, right? So what do you do? So you sit there, concentrate the mind and try to do some, control the activities of the senses and the mind. So basically all your chanting, puja, all those things are for this. Doing some pranayama. We will come to the details later. So basically he says, now sitting on that, you bring your mind to concentration by doing practices, right? Which are like all your, you know, archana, chanting, puja, ritualistic puja, and then parayana, do some pranayama. So all those things for concentrating the mind, they come under this. Then after that, what do you do? Samam kaya shiro grivam dharayan akilam sthiraha sampreksha nasika granthum nidhisthanava lokayan. So samam kaya shiro grivam. So your kaya, body, griva, your neck, shira, your head should be on a straight line. Samam kaya shiro grivam. So that they should be relaxed, but you be stable so that you can forget. The objective is to, you should remember the objective always. Forgetting the body is the objective. So as long as if there is any, you are not relaxed, your body, you cannot forget the body. Then you will have to hold on to the position so that you are not, you will not fall. Then you cannot forget the body. So you have to be in a stable position, broad base, right, straight, so that you can forget the body. Then, dharayan achalam siraha. So your gaze should be steady. Right? You should not be moving your eyes here and there. Then samprekshya nasika gramsvam sisyasthanava lokayan. So the gaze, there are different kinds of meditation for which different gazes are. So now you close your eyes, fine. Now within your closed eyes, where should I look? Eyes are closed. But then you can think about the, you can look up, you can look straight, you can look down, you can look left, right, within your closed eyes. No? So he says, within the closed eyes, samprekshya nasika gramsvam. So it is, your gaze should be downward as if you are looking at the nose. If your eyes were open, your nose should be visible. But now your eyes are closed. So that is why ever, as if. Like if you see all these Buddha statues and all, you can find it. They will keep it half open, because otherwise you will not see where he is looking. That doesn't mean you should keep your eyes half open. No. You close your eyes fully. The Buddha statues have got eyes half open so that you know where he is looking. But you close your eyes, but your gaze should be on the tip of the nose. Why? Because the meditation here is on the heart. So for the meditation on the heart, your gaze should be down. If the meditation is on the Guru Madhya, your gaze should be up. Because Shambhavi Mudra and all the things are there, right? Those are different kinds of meditation. But Gita's meditation is on the heart. So the gaze for this meditation should be in the tip of the nose. So he mentions that, right? And not looking in any other direction. Like don't, this is a closed eye. Like don't keep moving your eyeballs here and there. Look as if you are looking on the tip of the nose. Then, Prashantatma Vigatavihi Brahmachari Pratesitaha Manasamyamya Machitto Yukta Asita Matparaha. So, now Prashantatma. Let's forget about all about the past. Prashanta. Calm, quiet, contented, no grudges, no guilt. That is what is meant by Prashantatma. Right? No grudges, no guilt. About the past. Then Vigatavihi. Free from fear, anxiety about the future. Prashantatma is about the past. Vigata Bhiji is about the future. No ambition, no anxiety, no fear, nothing. Right? Then Brahmachari Pratyekshah. That is about the present. About the present, no desire for any sense experiences. No, like completely cut off from all sense objects. Right? So completely free from the sense of it. Brahmachari Vrate Sitaha. Be steady. Manasamyamya. Control the mind. Don't pursue the thoughts. Random thoughts will come. But try not to pursue them. Okay, you cannot control random thoughts. Whatever you do, random thoughts will come. But whether to pursue them or not is under your control. So whenever you say manasamyamya, control the mind, it is the second thought. Right? Don't pursue your thoughts. Any other thoughts. Right? Then manasamyamya mat chitto. Right? So and mat paraha. Having me as the goal, mat chitto yukta asita. These are all very important words actually. So we are talking about what is the meditation according to the Gita. If you invert them, you get all other kinds of meditation. People will say that walking meditation, you walk in a meditative mood, mindfulness. Here it is, asita, sit. Okay. Mat paraha, having me as the goal. People say, oh, if you meditate, you can become a millionaire. If you meditate, you can become successful in life. Here it is, mat paraha, I am the goal. No other worldly goal. Okay, so if someone claims by doing meditation you will be able to, you know, solve all problems, you can be creative, you can be critical thinking will improve, creative thinking will improve, fine, but that is not the goal. Okay, mat paraha, having me as the goal, then mat chitto, meditate upon me, no counting the breath, no following the breath, no emptying the mind. Those are all fine. Like, there are so many different schools of meditation, so many different traditions. We are not saying no to them. But here, when Gita says meditation, this is what it is. Gita is very, very particular. That is why these words are very important. Mat chitto. Meditate upon me. We have Ishvara, Ishvara Dhyana. Right? If someone says, no, I went to a meditation class, they asked me to empty the mind. Says, okay, fine. We are not saying no. But here, according to Gita, this is meditation. This is what Gita's recommendation. Gita doesn't deny any of them, but this is Gita's recommendation. Okay. Mat chitto yukta asita mat parah. Every word is very clearly, focusedly says what meditation is about. Okay. So, at the heart, you are looking at it, looking at the nose, close your eyes, sit, meditate upon the Lord, with the Lord as the goal. Right? So all those things, he establishes very, very clearly. Because there in the 10th shloka, we saw, right? Aparigraha, Nirashihi. So this is the explanation for all of them. Right? Nirashihi, no other desire. Aparigraha, don't leave everything. So he says, like, here he says, Mat Paraha, I am the goal.
right? So he gives very concrete what he wants us to do. Then what will happen? Your mind will actually, meditation will take time, right? Your mind will roam around. That is the nature of the mind. Don't worry. What does he say? Shanai shanai uparame buddhya kriti kritiya atma samstam manakritva na kinchita vichintaye, right? So shanai shanai, gradually, slowly, right? Uparame, right? So you control it. Buddhya kriti kritiya, but with firm grit. It will happen. Mind will try to roam around. Don't worry. Don't beat yourself. Don't become guilty. Don't regret. Because again, you know, like that should not become another regret. Oh, I am not able to meditate. Oh, when I sit for meditation, my mind is roaming around. Krishna says, don't worry, that is how the mind will. Mind will roam around. Don't worry. Whenever the mind roams around, bring it back. That is what he says. Next sloka. Yato yato nischarati manas chanchalam astiram tatat tato niyam yaitat atman yeva vasham nayet. Whenever the mind roams, bring it back, right? So very clearly he says, your mind will roam around. Don't worry about it. Don't feel guilty. Don't think you are doing something wrong. Don't think your mind is doing something wrong. No. This is how the mind will be, right? The mind will roam around. So whenever the mind roams, bring it back. That's a part of the process itself. You understand? It is not deviating from the process. The mind roaming around and you bringing back the mind is not a divergence. It is not a distraction. It is not a deviation. That is a part of the process. Your mind roaming around and you bringing it back is a part of the process. So don't worry. Understood? So there is in the Kathopanishad, the question comes, why is my mind roaming around? He says the mind is created like that. Paranthikani vrithna swayambho, right? So Paranthikani, the Lord has created the senses facing outside. Paranthikani vrithna swayambho tasmat paran pashyati na antaratma. The mind's nature is to run around to the senses, to the external objects. Why? Because the Lord has created us like that. You are not to be blamed. Understood? You are not to be blamed. The Lord, the mind and the senses have been created facing outwards. Paranthikani vrithna swayambho tasmat paran pashyati na antaratman kaschit dhiraha avrita chakshuhu. Some people who want to meditate, they turn the mind inward and pratyagatman, they look at inside. So what you are trying to do by meditation is against the norm. That you have to understand. The mind, the senses are created by the Lord outgoing. So why? Because this body is that of an animal. This mind is that of an animal. That is why they do experiments on animals and then for testing the drugs and all, for testing your medicine. They test it on a rat, no? Which means what? This body is that of a rat. That is why that which works for the rat will work for this body also. That will work for a monkey will work for this also. Because this body is that of an animal. Accept it. Right? And this body has been created facing outwards. So, but using this animal body, you are trying to be human. That is the achievement. Understand? So, this body, this mind will run outside. It is designed like that. It's okay. Accept it and then say, I want to go beyond this animal nature. I want to become divine. I want to establish my human nature and I want to rise even above my human nature and become a divine. So you come here. So that is why when your body runs out, you say like, yeah, it is okay. This body is like that. No problem. But I am not going to do that. That's all. So you cajole your body, cajole your mind, gradually to say, hey, but we have to do something different. Come on, let us achieve. Your body will say, like, see, all of you are here. You all know your body will say, hey, come on, the friends are going for a cricket match. Come on, let us go, yeah. Then you say, hey, no, we have to prepare for a gate. Exam is coming. You have to sit and prepare. It's so, yes,
your natural for your body to want to go and play around, while away, watch social media, do this, do that. But you say like, no, if you do that, you cannot achieve anything in life. We want to achieve something in life. So, keep it aside. Pull your back. Convince your mind, cajole your mind to bring it in. So that is why it is, yato yato nischarati manas chanchilam astiram tatastaso niyam yaitas asma yeva vacham naye. Bring it back. It's a part of the process. So don't worry. However times the mind roams around, bring it back. Right? And don't become guilty for that. That is what is very important here. Gita says, don't be guilty that your mind is roaming around. Because that is how that's the nature of the mind. Okay. But for that reason, you should not succumb to it. Because that is that he gave the first one we saw, the hierarchy of control has to be established. If you want to achieve something in life, you should not run the way of your mind. It's a beautiful Tamil song. Kan pona pokile, kal pohalama, kal pona pokile, manam pohalama. Like, wherever your eyes go, your leg should not go that direction. And wherever your leg goes, your mind also will go. So you have to pull it back. You have to restrain. And you have to put your mind, turn your mind inward, and you have to do it. Because you have a purpose. So, clarity should be there. This is the purpose, this is what I want to achieve, this is the process, this is what I need to do. I know this is how the mind will go. This is the easier part. I don't want to go to the comfort zone. I don't want to just slip back. I want to improve in life. I want to go up in life. So I want to do this. If that clarity is there, then everything will be fine. Right? So that is what question is. And then finally, what will you achieve by all these things? Prashanta manasam kenam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shanta rajatam brahma bhutam akalmasham. So he gives the list. He gives a list of five things which will be achieved. Prashanta manasam. The mind becomes tranquil. Means what? Free from all grudges, guilt, anxiety, fear. Now that's the problem. You said that are prerequisites. Now here he says this is what you will achieve. What is this? Right? So the thing is, it is step by step. So to be able to meditate, you have to first clear some of your grudges, anxiety, everything. That will help you to meditate still better. That will clear still further, it will make your mind calm. So it's a cycle. When you sit for meditation, things will come, disturbing you. So you solve them. Then you will be able to meditate still better. Then some more will come, solve them. Then some more will come. So basically the process is there. Right? So it is not that unless you clear this fully, you won't be able to sit and do it. No. 50% you clear, 70% you will be able to meditate. Then 70% you clear, 80% you will be able to meditate. 80% you clear, 90%. So it goes in a cycle. Ultimately, you will be able to not clear fully. Because mind nature is that. It will be clear to such an extent that it will not be disturbing anymore. That's all. So, Paramatma is very nice. It is, it will asymptotically reduce. Never go to zero, but it will go to that extent that it will not bother you anymore. Then you say, okay, fine. Doesn't matter. And how will it reduce? FIR reduction equal. Frequency, intensity, recovery time. In all these three dimensions, it will reduce. So suppose let us say you are a short tempered person. Whenever even someone provokes you slightly, your plate and tumblers will fly around, you throw everything around and then you keep scolding around, all kinds of flowery words will come out, like, you know, all kinds of things happen and then you hold it. Hold the grudge, don't talk to that person for 1 week. Suppose that is the condition you start with. So, as we improve, the frequency will come down. How frequently you get into this bout of anger will come down. Then intensity will come down. From physical expression, it will come, that will go away, but verbal expression may still continue. Then as you keep still progressing, the verbal expression also will go away. Still mental expression might be there. And after that also will go. So slowly it will come, the intensity will come down. And then recovery time. Initially, like if you get into a bout of anger, let us say you take 1 week to recover, it might come down to 1 day, then half a day, then a few hours. Then finally it will come down to, the scriptures say, very beautiful example they give. On a hot dosa tawa, if you sprinkle water, what happens? That's all. It will go away. Right? For a moment you will have that, this will be there, then it will all evaporate and then the dosa tava will be again full, no water, because already the temperature is very high. So 400 degree Celsius tava, like water will immediately boil off. So the anger on the in the mind of a Jivamukta is like water falling on a 400 degree Celsius tava. That's the example given, like, right? It will just immediately go. It will be there. But which sound will come? But then it's gone. Paramatma is in a very nice way. When something happens in your life, you say, what? Then you say, so what? So the time gap between what to so what is the measure of your spiritual development. Right? A highly spiritually developed person, the what will immediately follow by so what. The longer you take, it means, okay, you have got still more development to happen. So from what is the distance between what to so what? So, and it will not go to zero. What will be there, but so what will come. So the FIR reduction you call, frequency, intensity, recovery time. This will come down and it will never go to zero. Don't expect it to go to zero. It will just reduce. To saw very slight extent that you know it's no longer bothering. Then you will say, okay, let it remain, that's all. Doesn't matter. Right? So that is Prashanta Manasam. Right? Tranquil mind. Then Prashanta Manasam Enam Yoginam. Right? So Sukham Uttamam. So you will have the pleasure within, and then you have inner peace, contentment, all that. Then Upaiti Shanta Rajasam. So Rajas means activity, like the Rajasic one. Shanta Rajasam is your passion is settled down, right? In another way, if you look at Tattva Bodha and all, like you have this manifestation of nature, like you have this Tattva and all. So you have the gross physical one is the Tamas, the mind is the Rajas, and then the Tattva is the higher layer. Like, so basically, Upaiti Shanta Rajasam means like your Rajas will come down, your mind will settle down. Then Brahma Bhutam, you will understand that you and others are not different. The self in others, others in the self. So there is a jnana will happen, Brahma Bhutam. Then Akalmasham, your papa punya, everything will go away, the sanchita karma will go away. So then you have complete freedom from rebirth. So this is the sequence, right? As it will happen, so all these things you will be able to attain. So this is what? See, is the culmination of meditation. So why do you do meditation? There is this event here, right? So we will not go through this, I think, for want of time. So I have listed down the practice. I think most of you might have learned meditation from somewhere, otherwise some other time we can already join the study circle and then we will go through guided meditation. So here anyway, guided meditation list is given, you can go through it, and the expected outcomes also we already discussed. So we will stop here. Any questions?
If there are any questions, I request you to join VAC group. And on Tuesday, we are online as well as offline. So if you can have a chat there, it will be much better if you can elaborate. Now, and this is the best time to join VAC because Harin Ji is here, the last group, and there is a patient. Please contact him. He will join with your group.
So whoever is not on the BSC mailing group or WhatsApp group, you can, and if you want to join, and you can give the your phone number, email ID to Harish, and he will add you to the group.
Now I request Harish to give you a moment to tell us about the question.